Hello there. This is Mel Allen with your Saturday Sports Special. And now that we've left the sidewalks of New York for the baseball fields of Florida, the emphasis, of course, is on spring training. How are the teams shaping up down south? What rookies look good? What new faces will there be in action on the major league fronts this year? You know, ever since the early war years, when the cream was being skimmed off baseball's crop, there's been talk about how young players just weren't being developed, about how old-timers were being kept in the major leagues past their real usefulness. Well, that no longer seems to be the case, and we've got some facts and figures to prove anything we say. For instance, only 44 10-year men are in spring training this year. Some of those are real graybeards, although still pretty spry. For instance, Luke Appling, Hugh Casey, Dixie Walker, Dutch Leonard, and Johnny Mize. Those fellows have been around by as long as younger fans can remember. But you never quite think of Ted Williams as a 10-year man, or Enos Slaughter, or Tommy Henrick. Certainly not Bob Feller, who's just past 30, although he's been pitching Major League ball since 1936. Did you know that? And you can go right on through the list if you like. And although some of the great ones, like Joe DiMaggio, may be near the end of the string, there's no real indication that they are slowing down, that is, slowing down too much. Nevertheless, the fact remains that the 1949 spring training season, just getting underway in earnest, sees the accent on youth. The stars who were making headlines in pre-war days have largely given up the ghost. Youth will out, in baseball, just as in love or in war. Sporting News Weekly, incidentally, goes into this story in detail, pointing out that the average major league ages by position would indicate, well, for instance, in the National League, the Cincinnati Reds pitching staff right now averages only 27 years old. The oldest staff is a dubious honor shared by the Cardinals, Boston Braves, and Chicago Cubs, and the average age is only 31 years. As far as catchers go, the Brooklyn Dodgers are best off, averaging only 26, while the New York Giants field catcher is averaging 34 years old. The Giants' infield is old as two, averaging 30, while the Reds and Phillies' infields are tabbed at about 26. It's the Giants who boast of kids in the outfield, though, kids with a brilliant future, you can add. They tally out to a 25-year average. The league champion Braves are, on the average, the oldest, 31 years. And you can cite all the figures you want, but it comes out to only one thing. Baseball is still a young man's game. Ted Williams' take from the Boston Red Sox this year may go as high as $100,000 as we move into some short shots along the spring training fronts. Ted has a basic $77,000 contract for 1949, but picks up more as attendance soars. If the Red Sox attract as big crowds this year as last, Ted stands to collect $100,000. Last year, you got a flat 85 G's. And that ain't hay. Or is it hay? Good dough anyway. The Yankees' $60,000 bonus pitcher, Paul Hendricks, put his dough where his heart is. Hendrick is studying for the Lutheran ministry at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He turned over $1,500 of his wad to a church in Mallard, Iowa, where his father is pastor, and $1,500 more to the church he attends in St. Louis. An interesting note on baseball uniforms. National League players back in 1882 wore suits of varied colors. There was a different color for each position. Light blue, for instance, for the pitchers, scarlet for catchers, maroon for shortstops. But great confusion resulted. There might be a situation in which the second baseman of the team had batted reached second and the first baseman had reached first. Other players, mistaking the runner for the fielder, often threw to the wrong man. And as a result, after 2 months, this system of varied colored uniforms was legislated out of existence. And did you know that a forfeited game cost Joe Medwick the home run leadership in the National League in 1937? That was his greatest year when he took nearly all of his league's batting honors. And as for home run honors, he tied Mel Ott with 31. It was in a game in Philadelphia that Medwick hit a homer that never counted. The game was declared forfeited to the Cardinals because of stalling by the Phillies, and the homer was washed out of the records. Had it been allowed, Medwick would have beaten Mel Ott for home run honors in the National League in 1937 by one. The older Luke Appling grows, the more titles he picks up. Almost 40 years of age now, Luke is beginning his 20th season with the Chicago White Sox. He'll have three titles this year, shortstop, captain, and coach. He has been named playing captain and coach of the infielders. Red Ruffing is realizing an ambition this year. He's always wanted to manage a ball club, and he's getting his chance as skipper of the Muskegon Clippers in the Central League. Ruffing says he'll have three rules as a pilot. First, he'll tell his players to run. Second, he'll tell them to run some more. And finally, he'll tell them to keep running. That's Ruffing's three rules for keeping in condition. Run, run, run. And speaking of keeping in condition, our guest this evening is a young man who always stays in top-notch condition. Certainly, when he was operating back of the plate in the major leagues as a man in blue, he was in tip-top shape. One of the greatest umpires of all time. It's our pleasure to introduce to you at this time, ladies and gentlemen, Dolly Stark. How are you, Dolly?
Mighty fine, Mel. Real good to see you again.
I know you must be itching this time of the year, spring training coming along, to sort of go south and down the harness again.
Well, that's a natural urge. Most fellows who've been in the profession of baseball or umpiring, as soon as the boys start going south, you get that old feeling, gee, I'd like to be out in that ball field, scampering around, fielding bunts and getting in shape.
Speaking of getting in shape, what do you think of Red Ruffing's rules? Run, and in relationship to umpires now.
Well, that's a very fine idea, and any time that you're in shape, you're equal to the task that you're confronted with out on that ball field. You must run. It's a fast game. All the action in baseball is fast, outside of some dilatory pitcher walking in from the bullpen. I think it's a very fine idea, and I remember old Bill Donovan used to manage the Yankees and then the Jersey City Ball Club. That's all he kept saying in the spring of the year. Come on, get out there and run. A couple of laps around, before, after, during, and everything else.
Dolly, umpires have to sharpen their eyes, don't they, in spring training?
They sure do, and I took it upon myself to really be ready any time that I was ever out on the ball field, and particularly in the spring, inasmuch as that the eyes haven't been trained to the sharp pitches, the curveballs, the fastballs, low and inside and so forth. And I took it upon myself when I was down south with a ball club to get in back of the plate during batting practice, to scamp around the infield to get the legs in shape. And then when after all the boys were all through, I'd hurry out to the outfield and have some fellow long, slick fungo bat shag me or hit those flies and shag me from left to right to center and back until I'd almost fall down. Of course, that strengthened the eyes. And the reason for me chasing fly balls was that it eliminated the water of your eyes because they're strengthened. And you take the first part of a year when we have these cold winds up north, Mel, you'll find that a great many of these fellows are umpiring, all ball players, that water is really getting in their eyes, and in umpiring, don't miss any.
And with water in your eyes, you don't see those pitches as well as you'd like to.
That's right.
Have you ever had to call a pitch and suddenly water well up in your eyes and cause you not to really see the flight of the pitch?
Well, it happened one day down in Clearwater, I believe. I was umpiring a ball game, and I was just starting in, as a matter of fact. It was only two or three ball games. A little chilly day. And Big Jumbo Elliott, formerly the Brooklyn Dodgers, was on the hill, and the old master, Bill Clem, was working on first base, and he came in a little late, and we didn't have too much time to rub up the balls. As you've noticed, Mel, many a times up there in that booth, you always see these balls sail. Well, anyway, on the very first pitch, Big Jumbo towed the hill, and there he went. And the ball went off this way and that way, and I, in back of the plate, started to say in this kind of a language. It wasn't any language, but it was this. It was ball one. Well, the ball took off, and there it was, and the catcher started to laugh, and the hitter started to laugh, and he says, Dolly, what was it? I says, well, I got it right. The ball was outside and low. And Clemmy, the old champ down there at first base, kept hitting his right hand against his left as much as say, boy, that's the way to do those things and get that ball right. And that day, it happened to be, as I say, a cool, chilly day, and there was a little water in the eyes.
That wasn't the toughest decision you ever had to make in your life umpiring, is it, Dolly?
No.
Or was it?
No, that was just a spring training game, but I always worked pretty hard even in spring training, in as much as that the old Stuffy McGinnis, the great first sack of the Philadelphia Athletics, always told me, he says, Dolly, you keep on hustling no matter what the score is or what the ball game is. There's many a young fellow who's trying to get a job, and if you're loafing on him, you're not doing right by him, and you're not doing right by yourself.
What is the toughest decision you've ever had to make on a baseball field? I mean, would there be one that was at a time that, well, for example, Bill Stewart had to make a call in that World Series in the first game at second base on the pickoff play with Feller and Boudreaux and Phil Massey. Of course, he didn't hesitate, but it was a tough decision.
It certainly was. You know, those decisions as such, they come up so fast, and the relative position of the ball and the glove and the runner, the feet, the arms, and what have you. These plays come up quite often. Talking about a World Series, unfortunately, an umpire will have a tough break. Of course, a ball player can kick one or strike out with the bases loaded. We take, for instance, Sibby Sisti going up to the plate in a crucial part of the ball game where the Boston Braves still had a chance to go out and win. And ordinarily, this fella is a pretty good bunter. And incidentally, I might digress for a moment. In other words, I think of some of these fellas would get down in the spring, especially pitchers, to learn how to bunt. The word sacrifice is just as the word implies, and that's a very valuable thing. And that also reminds me of Irvin Shocker, who was a great pitcher with the Yankees, who incidentally won about six or seven ball games by reason of a bunt or a squeeze play. And it's so valuable, all these things. Tough decisions to make, I had one, but luckily I got out of it very nicely. The World Series 1931, the seventh game back of the plate. Count 3-2 and runners on first and second. Score 4-2 in favor of St. Louis Cardinals. Wild Bill Hallahan on the mound. And camera eye Max Bishop up at that plate. 3-2 is the count, two away. All eyes were on that plate, that pitch. But luckily, the ball came right through the center of the plate. The ball met the bat out to center field. Pepper Martin grabbed it, and the series was over. That could have been a tough spot if either Hallahan or Bishop just took a peek, as they say, gave me that look.
Well, that was a tough one. I'm glad you got out of that one, Dolly. That was Dolly Stark who'd been chatting with us, friends, as we moved down to spring training camps in Florida. Lost and found, whatever became of Pepper Martin, the old wild horse of the Osage, outfielder and third baseman for the Cardinals when they were the old gas house gang with no holds barred. Well, Pepper's back as a manager this year in charge of the Miami Florida Club of the Florida International League. He'll be managing just across the bay from one of his old teammates. Joe Medwick opens the season managing Miami Beach, and we can see where Rips Norton rivalry will develop there. And just to keep the record straight, the world's record for the running broad jump is 26 feet 8 and a quarter inches, held by the one and only Jesse Owens, who set the mark at Ann Arbor, Michigan back in May of 1935. Come to think of it, you don't realize how great Owens was until you realize that his marks in the sprints and broad jump all were set years ago. Nowadays, records of any kind are cheap, and the test of greatness lies in setting them so that they stand. Jesse Owens did.